Hello everyone and welcome to another Charity Digital podcast episode. I'm Sasha, the Campaigns Manager here at Charity Digital, and I'll be your host for today. In this episode, we'll be talking all about content and what the key things are to consider as a charity when you're creating it. Content can cover a whole host of things, such as articles, videos, podcasts, webinars, maybe even interviews, case studies, infographics, and more. In truth, there will be some content that your charity really doesn't need to produce, but if you're looking towards getting some more content out to your audience, then we can help you to consider what steps you might need to take when it comes to approaching it. So, are we really qualified to give you this advice? Absolutely. You're already listening to a piece of content we've produced. And we'll be honest, we're not breaking the bank in some of the ways that we produce our content. Even better for those of you who haven't got all that much cash to splash. Today, I'm being joined by the minds behind the webinars, podcasts, articles, and more that you see being produced from Charity Digital. We have Laura Stanley and Johan Mark Jones, our content editors, and Chris Hall, head of marketing, to offer best practice advice and digital hacks for you to take away today. So let's get started and let's get right to it. I want to start off by asking, what does great content look like? And I think it'd be good if we actually start with the written word. Johan, I think I'd like to go to you for this first one.
Thank you, Sasha, for having me. I think content, especially written content, but all content really, should be seen more as a sort of cycle. So to begin with, you need the fundamentals in place for all content. You need a house style, which should define sort of grammar and punctuation, usage, and general tone of voice as well, which should sort of reflect on your mission. And then you need to agree on formatting, which relies on your CRM and decided use of formats. One thing I see, for example, on a lot of sites is you'll have double spacing on some aspects and then single spacing and two spaces, paragraph breaks between subheadings, which it just looks a bit sloppy. So getting those agreed and getting those fundamentals agreed at first is a good way of sort of setting the establishing guidelines. Equally, images, choice of images are often sort of all over the place, where you could actually have some strict rules in place that are really easy to follow and everyone knows about, such as color schemes, image types, ensuring you have diversity as well. So on the Charity Digital side, for example, if you have a look, you'll see all our images are minimal but vibrant. So we really try and push that, and whoever's picking the images is aware of those basic fundamentals. So once your fundamentals are done, I think you move on to sort of planning, which is a vital point in all content creation. So I suggest that charities should all have, of all sizes, could have a digital content calendar, which just basically keeps you up to date on what's going out, the writer or the creator, the type of content, whether written or video or pod or web, whatever, the publication date, and maybe some post-publication information as well about what marketing you've done and so on. And then a space for data analytics if you're a bit more sort of further on your journey. And then it's about content creation. So you should have rules for each type of content. So for example, the length, the style. So for written content, which was your question, is stuff like strong titles and subtitles and like programs you can use to make sure the writing is really readable, like Hemingway and Grammarly. And then there's plenty of other programs. For example, Word itself has great functionality. There's an embedded reader of sorts, which allows you to sort of look at written content in a different way. That leads me on to another key tip, I think, which is generally, if you are creating written content, I think sometimes you can get bogged down in it. Key things to do is highlight all the content and change it to a weird font, reread it, and it will become clear where the problems are. So American typewriters, a really bold and weird font. Do that size 18, read it again. I'm sure you'll pick up some mistakes and you'll rework some sentences to do it better. Another tip is reading aloud written content. That always sort of makes you find the problems within it, the grammatical spaces where you might not be sort of properly conveying information in the most effective way. And another key tip for written content is keeping an ideas folder, whether that's just a notepad on the side of your desk or whether you've got a spreadsheet with it. We have a spreadsheet, for example. I just tell everyone to throw any ideas, no matter how good or bad they might seem at the moment, and put them in there. A final thing to mention in terms of creation of content for written is SEO. And I think it's SEO is a bit more of an art than a science, I think, because the algorithm is constantly changing, which means the rules are constantly changing. But there are certain principles that I think remain constant throughout. So just to run through a quick few is to ensure all content is well written, readable, and engaging. Use hyperlinks, but only use hyperlinks to reputable site. Don't hyperlink to your cousin's blog. It's better to hyperlink to BBC or The Guardian or whatever. write precise and concise and keyword focused headings and subheadings, but don't overdo subheadings and don't overdo keywords, because you start to lose that human touch, and then the Google essentially punish you for it, or has been known to punish you for it. Don't do any cheats, and make your site easy and optimized for mobile as well. And a final thing to consider is length for SEO. You should be doing at least 1,200 words for that, but likely over 2,000, according to sort of the recent debates on the internet. And anyone who's not that familiar with SEO, I think I would just mention again, you could use something like Yoast or Scribe, which will give you key tips that will help you define your SEO without having that sort of specialist skills. And then I think the final stage of the life cycle would be post-publication. That's not my real expertise. Content creation is more my expertise, but that's stuff like email marketing, socials, and other things like that. So yeah, I think it's a cycle. Sorry, that was a lot of information.
I mean, that was quite the way to start the podcast, I have to say, Johan. Gosh, so many tips in speed record time.
Need to have a big drink of water, Johan. I hope you've got one next.
I'm knackered now.
Not surprised you're exhausted. I mean, I was going to ask Laura and Chris if they had any what great content looks like. But I mean, Johan, I'm sure you've taken up a lot of the tips there. Having said that, of course, Laura, is there anything you want to add from your perspective? What some great content might look like?
The one thing I'd say with titles, especially when you're doing like SEO or something like that, I think you need to try and be reflective of your content, because I think everyone's done that thing where you clicked on a headline and been like, well, that's not what it said. And although you want to get as many clicks as possible, you also want to build trust with your audience, don't you? So just try and be reflective. Something that I found really helpful, because I struggle with titles, is either giving myself time to step away from it and think about the big picture. Also coming up with like how I would describe it to my friend if they were like, what are you writing? And I was like, well, this is the short synopsis of what I'm writing. Here's a sentence on it. And also just, I don't know, just making sure to write as many titles as you can, basically. And then I feel like when you're on the fifth or seventh one, that's when you'll be like, oh, that was so easy, why didn't I find that one? But it sometimes takes a minute just to take that step back, I think. So
don't know about you, Chris.
Me, is it my turn? Well, I think, Sasha, you opened the podcast by saying the minds behind the content. I think Johan showed us all up there and showed that there might be one great mind behind the content, and Laura and I just come along for the ride. No, but I just want to say, actually, before I go into my answer, that at the time of the recording, this is actually Sasha's last day as well. So I do want to immortalise you in Charity Digital podcast folklore, and just say thanks very much for all your hard work and so much that you've done for this podcast as well. And
yeah, now this is good content.
Can never get away with it. You can never escape it. It's going to be there forever. It'll be able to be listened to by hopefully lots of people.
Yeah, I mean, good content is pulling on the heartstrings here. So I think this is what Chris is trying to do. But thank you.
Is it working?
It is working. It's working for me.
Brilliant. Well, for that, you were my audience, so that made a lot of sense. I don't know too much about the written side of it in terms of the hard deals that sort of Laura and Johan could be able to share, because as both of them can probably attest to, if they've ever read one of my sort of scantily pulled together article, it's sort of hard to navigate around, and there's a lot of grammar and spelling mistakes in there as well. But generally, when answering the question, what does great content look like, I always pull it back to two things, and two main things that you should always have front of mind. The first is have a good story. It sounds quite simple and quite futile almost, but you know, create something that's fun and engaging and something that you enjoy at the same time. And then the second bit is make that story or create that story with an audience in mind. You know, the thank you to Sasha was my audience in mind just there. But this podcast we're creating off all other sort of content creators out there, I hope they'll take some advice from us. So we set out an audience before we kind of create any sort of content that we go on to create. And I want people to sort of focus on these two things, because I quite often feel that too many people get wrapped up in the how long or what style, etc. But the real key to making good content is to focus on the content itself. You know, I've said before on other podcasts and webinars and you know, street corners and other places that if we like a show, we binge watch it. If we like a book, we read it for hours. You know, if we like a podcast, we sort of listen to it back to back to back. So make sure you focus on good content that you know your audience will enjoy, and you're already off to a winner.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, cheers all of you for the thanks, of course. Thank you, Chris. But also for all of that really insightful information. I know we looked a little bit more at articles there, so I'm actually quite intrigued to know your thoughts on perhaps some other content that's available for charities to sort of produce, whether that be videos, webinars, podcasts, and, you know, in the spirit of being on a podcast. Laura, I'd like to know your perspective a bit more on what options are available in terms of for charities in terms of making a podcast that's actually good and actually interesting.
Oh, I feel like the pressure's on because everyone's listening to this podcast.
Yeah, it does feel weird, doesn't it? It's like we've got to speak the truth now, don't we?
I guess the key thing is to know what you want to achieve with your podcast. So for this one, we like to share practical steps and advice and things that are going on in the sector, and that's sort of what our mission is, if that makes sense, with the podcast. So I think know what that is. And know what value you're bringing to that conversation. Because I feel like The World and His Wife has a podcast now, right? So you need to make sure that you've got a reason to be in that space. And so I think that's the first big tip I'd give. And then the other one is not overthink it too much at the same time. Because it seems like a really daunting prospect. Like I get in front of a microphone and then I immediately panic. But actually doing a podcast can be really fun. And it doesn't have to break the bank at all. Like you can... when I first started doing, I have my own podcast, and when I first started doing that, we did it on an app called Dictaphone that was on my iPhone. And we just sat and put that between me and my co-host and recorded that way. And that works just as well as anything. And then, I mean, this podcast is recorded on Zoom. So you can just do that. That gives you a little audio track that you can edit at the end of it. There's lots of different editing software you can use. Audacity is free. That's quite intuitive to use as well. It's not hard at all. And then it can take a little bit of getting used to. So what I would say is give yourself time to edit, because editing often takes longer than the actual recording. In fact, it does take longer than the actual recording. So just make sure, be patient with like yourself, especially in that first edit, because it'll be hard. And also you have to listen to your own voice, and that's awful. I mean, it is on my end anyway.
Same. Have an accent.
I feel you.
It's when you start seeing your own laugh in the little audio lines and you're like, oh, no, I don't need to see that big burst of heart. But yeah, just make sure, like, just get the tech that you feel like you need in place, and you'll learn as you go as well. So that's good. The main thing is to make sure that everyone could be heard clearly. So because that's literally what a podcast is, right? So you want to have a good mic. It can just be the one on your earphones, you know, the little box on your earphones, or it can be on a headset, or you know, a big special mic if you feel like you've got the budget for it, but there's not need for it any. For topics, you want to try something maybe evergreen if you can, because although it's sometimes good to have really like topical content, people will find that the nature of podcasts is that they're on demand, aren't they? So you'll find them later. So you want to be able to, yeah, you want to have something that someone's going to be finding in 2 years and be like, oh, I still want to really listen to that. So that'd be good. But yeah, also don't panic if you mention things that are like relevant now either, because people, you know, will be aware of history.
Yes, time almost. Is a thing. So
yeah, exactly.
No. Yeah, agreed. No, I think that's some really good points there. And can I just clarify, did you say The World and His Wife have a podcast?
Yeah, extremely heteronormative of me, I'm sorry.
That's a really interesting phrase. I've never heard it, but I'll be using it again. So thank you, Nora. Chris, I'm quite interested to hear about your experience and maybe your tips when it comes to perhaps webinars. Obviously, yeah, we do quite a lot of them here, don't we? So
yeah, before I get into that, I just want to pick up on a point that Laura said, which I thought was really good when it comes to podcasting, which was deciding if it's something that you should do. And I think to jump on Laura's analogy there, it is something that everybody is doing now. And podcasts are one of those things that don't create new audiences. And I think they have this misconception that they're used to build new audiences and drive new audiences. What they are perfect for is creating deeper engagements with the audiences that you have. So when you're sort of considering whether to do a podcast or not, to build on Laura's point, that should be top of mind and top of thinking as well. But wanted to build on that because I thought, Laura, that was a fantastic point. But Sasha, to come back to your question that you've just asked is about webinars. Webinars in the same vein, you know, something, you know, webinars need to be something that you need to decide whether it's something you need to do or not. They serve a great purpose and are often great ways to get sort of lots of information out in a relatively short space of time. You know, they tend to be hour and a half max. And you can pack that hour full of information, full of guidance, you know, particularly from a charity point of view. If you, you know, want to get a lot of information to service users about something very specific, or even if you want to give donors a little bit of an insight, for example, into what their money goes to when they donate to your organization, it can be great for just sort of short, sharp bursts of short, sharp bursts of information. Had a strong coffee after lunch. My mouth's going faster than my brain. So they're really good for that. I think from a more visual perspective, what really makes a good webinar is a good presentation and a well-researched script. You know, decks and presentation decks really need to be lively and vibrant, not too much text. You know, don't rely on the slides. You should know the content. You know, let the slides add to what you're speaking about. Let them add value, essentially. Can you get some nice visuals on there, maybe a video or two, maybe some nice graphics, that sort of thing. I also think it's really important to think on accessibility guidelines when you're building presentation decks for webinars as well. So you've got the website content accessibility guidelines, which give you a really good breakdown of contrasting and understanding what colors go well to make your presentation deck stand out a little bit more, and make it sort of easier to read for those who might struggle. So make sure you're focusing on that as well. Obviously, make sure what you're presenting is relevant to your audience. As I said, you know, audience is the second part of all good content after having a good story. So whatever you're presenting, it needs to be super, super relevant. You know, include lots of examples. You know, don't just keep it information after information after information after information. What can you do to add specific relevance to your audience that is sort of participating in the webinar? Can you bring in sort of special guests who can speak to specific subject matters that might be relevant to the audience? Can you include case studies? Can you include examples? Anything that makes it, the sort of content go, actually, that makes more sense now. That makes more sense. Or that I've been through something very similar to that. And the last point I sort of have is make sure you get your audience involved. You know, I always sort of say at the sort of top of any webinar that I'm delivering, like, it's the content that we're going to put forward is going to be well researched. It's going to be the best we think it can possibly be for that audience and based on the subject matter. But the added value to any webinar or any sort of content interaction is what the audience member themselves can get out of it. Webinars are great because, unlike a podcast where someone might listen to this in isolation, someone will listen to a webinar essentially in a virtual room with up to sort of X amount of people, okay, if it's like 150, 200, and you're all together on that one Zoom chat, you can then use that chat function or Teams function or whatever else you choose to use to really drive some participation. And as a host, you can do certain things like asking questions, running polls, asking people to share sort of their own case studies, their own stories in the chat, that you'll find the sort of hive mind or little community that you've created on that webinar really start to bounce off each other a little bit. And often feedback we get is the best sort of takeaways that audience members have had during webinars have been those little interactions or the new friend they've made or the new peer they've connected with, to be able to say, we're sharing similar challenges or we're sharing similar stories, we're sharing similar things at the minute, we're going through this as well. Let's pick this up offline, or here's something that might help you, here's something that might help you. It's actually really sort of underrated, valuable asset of any sort of webinar that you could potentially do. And also you want to add the ability, make sure you have the ability for the audience to ask questions as well. That's a great way for the audience to connect with you as the presenter, you as the organization that's presenting the webinar as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I do really like what you said about people sort of engaging with each other in that chat. Obviously, you know, I've been producing the webinars, and seeing that community happen sort of online is really lovely, because obviously I think a lot of us have been isolated really over the past few years. And then you can kind of see, oh, actually, there's so many other people going through this similar problem, or I don't know, just it just makes it feel like there's more of a community again, at a time where unfortunately we've not been able to have that so much. So
yeah, it's weird how much energy it gives you as a host as well. Specifically, you know, up until this week where Sasha, you and I delivered a webinar in the same room for the first time in 2 years. You know, you as a host tend to be sat on your own. You're not in a room presenting to people where, you know, you can't hear the laughs, you can't see the reactions, that sort of thing. So being able to draw a little bit of energy from that chat as well is actually quite important. And really quite, understated.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you, Chris. So, Johan, are you ready to give us some lightning fast talking and give us all these tips in record time again? I'm going to turn to you specifically on videos. If you've got any sort of ideas on how charities can try and make good content via video.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up slowly on a couple of points. But yeah, I think Chris and Laura echoed this, but I think a key when it comes to webinars, podcasts, everything, is pick the content that's right for the topic. So I think sometimes people, like, think about the topic before you think about the content type. If you want to produce something on, you know, the history of a particular jazz bar in London, that might not lend itself to an article, but it does. Well, so that does lend itself to an article. It also lends itself to a video. It also doesn't really lend itself to a webinar, obviously. And it doesn't lend itself that much to a pod unless you have people who went there, and then it could be a discussion, but that's a different type of content. And the other thing I'd say, based on what Laura and Chris said, is don't feel that you need to create any particular type of content. Like, I think I'm echoing a point that was made. People make podcasts for the sake of it, it seems sometimes, and they don't need to. And for charities with finite time and finite money, I think it's key to focus on what you're doing well. A metaphor would be, you know, we often advise charities not to use all social media. Don't use all six and spread your sort of resources trying to maximize all six. We've actually had quite a journey recently in time, starting with nothing, no real idea of what we're going to do. And now we're in a pretty solid position with our videos. So in terms of the quick tips that I would say, I think a few things you can do. Don't need to spend a lot of money. You can either record on your mobile phone, you can buy a cheapish camera, or you can work with videographers. And that's a bit more costly, but it's still not breaking the bank, really. You can have, if you're, let's presume you're going to work on your phone, though, I'd say lighting tips. One golden tip is to stand, have the camera on the back of a window, basically facing away from the window, but behind a window, and then it'll give the person who's, if it's sort of a person talking to the camera, it'll give a rounded light on their face, so you'll have no shadows. And it's just like a quick tip for lighting. You can get these cheap audio microphones, I think, or, you know, which Laura mentioned as well. They're really cheap. They're not £50 will get you a decent one, or one that's good enough for purposes of creating a semi-decent video. And then you can write a script, and you don't have to write a whole script. You could write a sort of crib sheet. You could have a full teleprompter if you wanted to, but you could also just have a couple of notes down that you sort of work from and ad lib. The other thing I'd mention, I think, for videos is using props, using humor, and again, focusing on a tone of voice so that you're conveying things in the right way. Make that aligned with your mission. If you're talking about a somber subject, then obviously adopt that tone. Don't be playful unless playfulness is allowed. And if it is, use humor and use that. And finally, just to jump on one more point that Laura mentioned in regards to the podcast, and is editing. Editing will make a good video great. And I think it's not that difficult. We've done it internally in a way that basically allows us to get from A to B. Videographers will do it for you, but I think it's probably the thing that's going to take you from A to B. And there's loads of free options on the internet. On Apple and Microsoft, for example, have their own. So it's likely the computer you're using has an option for editing video. There's apps on mobiles that can do it too. So there's lots of options, and you don't have to break the bank. I'm going to stop because I won't.
Going for another session. talking now. That's great. Thank you, Johan. And, you know, actually, I think all of us have been quite aware of the budget, essentially. You know, how much might something cost if we are trying to create a particular type of content? All of your answers there, I think, allowed for that flexibility to say, you know, you don't always have to go really high tech, high budget. I'm just wondering if anyone's got any sort of further tips for specifically small charities who do have, you know, perhaps some high ambitions, but not the biggest budget. I know we've mentioned a few, but maybe Chris, if you've got any other sort of tips there, and if anyone else wants to jump onto that either.
Well, you know, there's loads of places you can get free images. I think from creating video content, we all have phones, we'll have smartphones these days, which we carry around with us. So we're all content creators pretty much every second of every day. We can all write ish, as I was alluding to myself earlier, not being the best, but we all have the ability to sort of put pen to paper, put words on it, type words on a Word document, that sort of thing. So it's more of a, I think my tip for doing it on a budget is don't worry so much about the outsides of it and focus on the two key things that I was kind of mentioning before. Let the rest kind of fall into place. You know, keep focused on the story and being audience driven in the beginning in terms of what you're creating. And like Johan said before, like, use the right tools for the job essentially, and use the right format for the content you want to put out there and the content that your audience desires. The production will all come sort of as you grow and as the content that you create grows as well, and as your organization grows. You know, think back to sort of the most famous YouTubers in the world now, all started with bad webcams in their, you know, parents' basement or in the garage type of things. The very first stories ever told in the history of the world type of thing were written on cave walls. It's not so much worrying about the look, the feel, or even the length to a degree. I mean, it's all about just being a bit brave and sort of going out there, giving it a go, but keeping focus on the content. What should the content be about? And who is it for? Look at the Bayeux Tapestry. You know, it's a great story on a bit of parchment that goes on for miles. It goes on for miles, it goes on forever. But it's one of the most famous pieces of content in the world. I don't know how I've plucked that analogy out.
I don't know what that is.
You don't know what that is.
I'm shocked.
I am as well, Laura. Thank you.
It's got some smashing, like graphic images of people.
She can't even speak. She's so shocked.
Honestly, I've been shocked into near speechlessness, but never full speechlessness.
Anyways, we'll do a separate podcast on what the Bayeux Tapestry is.
a bonus episode. Yeah.
But distraction aside and sidetrack, it's just about focusing on the content. Don't worry too much. You can be make videos on your phones, give writing a go, source free images from the free image banks that I'm sure Laura and Johan will go on to sort of share in just a moment. But be brave, be a bit bold with it, but be audience driven.
Brilliant. Yeah. Laura, Johan, yeah, go for it.
I'll jump in. Yeah, I mean, I just want to echo what Chris said and just reference anyone that is listening. Everything we've mentioned so far can be done for free. And in fact, is done for free. If you, we got free CMS systems such as WordPress. You can do your written up articles on there, and there's plenty more where they came from. There's loads of options that are free. You can record your videos on mobiles, edit on free software, Zoom for pods and webs, all free. I mean, after 45 minutes, I think you'll get charged or something, but we're going to nail this in about 42. So it's perfect. Again, the post-production, that's all free if you so choose, and that's socials and free to upload on YouTube and everything like that. So the free stocked images that Chris mentioned, you could check out Pixabay or Unsplash. They're popular options. And I think they're, again, free. But then I will just say a couple of content life hacks, because I think is a good sort of place to end. And these are kind of not mistakes, but things that people overlook. So, for example, repurposing and republishing content. People don't often update or republish content they've already published, and they likely have a lot of unused content that they could repurpose. So, for example, you could write an article to go with a video. Rather than just uploading it on YouTube, you could have an article and then embed the video in the article. We do it all the time. This podcast you will find on an article in 2 months' time that has a related topic. It's good for us because more people engage, and it's good for the consumer because they can engage in different ways. I think also a little tip is, if you're shooting content, if you're using a videographer, if you're going to pay for it, or even if you're doing it on your phone, do content in bulk, get a few of them done at the same time. And if you're going out to third parties, you can ask for discounts. We've done it before with videographers where we've actually said, look, we'll do 3 videos in a day. Can you give us a special price? And they've all been receptive to that. So it's something worth considering. And the final point I will mention is, yes, you can go around and you can ask for favors, ask for people to share, and use your community generally. Guest blog on other charity sites, guest blog on other sites broadly, but drive traffic back to your site. And one more thing is, you can always put a call to action at the bottom of any content, which will drive further engagement. So people like what they read, if they like what they watch, if they like what they hear, at the end of that, they can have more and redirect them and allow them to engage more. That will improve your engagement rates, but also as a charity, allow more people to understand your mission, and hopefully for service users, giving them more support when needed.
Thank you, Joanne. I was going to go to Laura in case you've got any tips, Laura, but Joanne may have very well stolen them all. So, Laura, feel free to have your piece and say one last thing before we wrap up.
Oh, just to jump on one of Joanne's points, actually, just to say that, yeah, don't underestimate how much people want to get involved with your content, right? Because I think you think it, just always just reach out to people. They will mostly say yes. And so that, and it can be a bit of a numbers game, but you'll be able to find people who are interested and who want to, and it'll be good fun and have fun. Yeah,
just one last thing to add as well that I forgot to mention before, actually, which is, make sure you're learning from your content as well. And I think that's equally as important as creating it. So to be able to progress it forward, make sure you've got like decent analytics and stuff set up so you can always check how people are engaging. You know, look at views, time on page, go into the deep metrics of sort of engagement, time in videos, amount of time watched, like podcast length listened to, that sort of thing. That'll give you a good picture of how content is specifically landing, and then that'll allow you to change it as you go forward. Just wanted to make sure I got that across because I think I forgot to mention it earlier.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, guys. Gosh, I think we got so much out of that one. Lots of helpful tips for charities to go away with to create their own content. And if you do, good luck. Can't wait to see it. But for now, thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Feel free to rate and subscribe. We'll have many more to come, but not from me, because this was my last one, as Chris kindly mentioned. So thank you so much for everyone who has been a dedicated podcast listener at Charity Digital, and all the best for now. Thanks again.
Thanks, Sasha. Bye, everybody.
Bye.